will be,
27. Is October 27th, and ready last, so in today's class, and we're with Edith now, yeah, and today, our topic is gonna be storytelling, stories that she heard, or stories that she know, of her culture. And we met yesterday, and she wanted to share some stories, and she was also wondering, any students would like to share a short story from their culture also. So we'll begin with Edith.
Thank you. When, I grew up with, my dad, and I remember he would always, take stories, paper stories, and also write back and forth with a reel-to-reel tape, back and forth to their friends. And I grew up with one particular story, which I already told in one of the classes. And it stuck in my head, in my heart, and that's very special to me. And, one of the stories that was just amazing was a ten-legged polar bear. And I found it. And, Abakanam, collector, Abakan wrote two stories. One was, Kokoyak, which is a ten-legged polar bear, and Inokosiyaro. He wrote two, and I was so impressed with what Edna, Dr. Edna McLean has done in reference to writing them in Inuvik. And I found some, here's the one on Kokoyak, which I'm going to read in English. And Atatelui, it's just amazing, it's just beautiful, it's written by Edna also. It's a grandchild with grandfather, told by Vincentaya, who is my father, my dad. I'm sorry, this one was transcribed by Kathy Ita Demensa, Aliak, who is now Kathy Aliak. Kokoyak was done by Edna McLean. So correction on the transcription. Kokoyak, this one was transcribed by Edna McLean, and this one, which my father told, was transcribed by Kathy Aliak. And so it's a detailed story in our language, and I highly recommend that you read it, because it's phonetic. Even if you're not an Eskimo, or from England, or from wherever, or from Connecticut, you can read it, it's simple, it's phonetic, like the way it looks, that's the way you read it. And so, Atatelui, that's the grandchild. And I'm looking forward to reading it, it's kind of thick. It's told by my dad, Vincentaya Senior. So, if you are interested in acquiring these, I bought these from upstairs, the fourth floor, Mary Kaplan. We can purchase them, they're not that pricey. They're really good stones by our immigrants from up north. And the one that I read, Avalai Khatigi, it's about a polar bear and a seal. That means friends. And it was written by Edna McCrae. This book, she wrote it. It's a really beautiful story about the polar bear and the seal and you know what? This will really inspire you to look up the dictionary and try and figure out, because it's like a, I remember when we first started learning how to speak in English, they used only three words or so, like C-J-1-1. Remember those? C-Puff, Jump, you know, those simple, and that's how we learn how to talk in English. And this is like this. It's very simple. It's like a children's book. So I'm pretty sure you can get a hold of an English dictionary. Someone has mine, and I loaned it to them. And so ask Larry Kaplan or Dora Issa, who is upstairs. Ask anyone in the Navy study to get a hold of a dictionary. And I will reiterate what I have said about learning the language. If people can learn Spanish or Japanese, Yes. So, I would like to read this in English. I had a chance to read this. It's a short story about the ten-legged polar bear. And I've heard it not once, but several times about the story about the ten-legged the ten-legged polar bear. Kokoak. And it was told by Floyd Avakana. I knew him personally when we were growing up. They were like right next door to us, very related to us. Floyd Avakana told the story, and Edna McCain transcribed the story into English language. And this book is all English. It's all written in English. Okay with everybody? It's like a ten-legged polar bear. Okay. This is verbatim. I don't want to change anything from the story. You might hear unusual grammar English. It's not a perfect English grammar, but I translated from Inuit to English. Okay. The ten-legged polar bear, and this is Edna talking with Avakana, okay, the third sentence. Who is your name? Avakana. Mm-hmm. And Edna is asking him, where did you hear the story? And Avakana stated, I heard it from a lot of people, the ten-legged polar bear. Yes, from Barrow. And he answered, from Barrow and from people anywhere. And Edna said, okay, go ahead. over there in Kanavistak, or was it Milstavik? Whichever land it was, her people were. There is a man who went to go look out down there. He went down there, so he knew where the hole of the 10-legged polar bear was. He knew where the hole was. He went to look out for the 10-legged polar bear. The one who was looking out knew where to escape, so he went to look out for it. In a big hill of ice, he knew of a broken eye that had an opening. It's an old floating eye which had an opening like this. This opening is wide, and the inside is small. He knew that kind of a safe place. He thought of it and went to look out for the 10-legged polar bear. While he was there looking out, even though he knew that was the hole of that kind and knew whose hole that was, he was determined to get it. You could see the bubbles on the hole. Even though he knew, he decided to look out for it. When he came up, he poked both of his eyes. His eyes were both poked. He was coming up by crushing the snow with his teeth. And he was trying to come up. The man fled. When the polar bear came out of the hole, he went through his footprint and started going after him. When he started going after him, he weaved to the right and to the left. That's the way he started running. He swerved while he was running away so that it would confuse the polar bear. When the polar bear approached the footprints, which were to and fro, the man was quite afar off. He fled where he knew he had to go to that big broken eye. So he fled before the polar bear got near him and finally got to that safe place. So he went in there, way in there, way back in there. See, that 10-legged polar bear who was tracking the man's footprint tried to go in there. And he got stuck, for it was narrow inside. When he positioned himself in there, it was tight. See, when that polar bear was stuck, the man went to the other way, making sure he was away from the polar bear. See, that polar bear was stuck. Yes, this is Edna. Really. Amazed by this story. Yes, what happened to the man? And so he went around the polar bear and was behind him, so he started poking him through his anus. The polar bear couldn't do anything because he was stuck. He couldn't move. He poked him consistently on his anus and he killed him. So when he killed him, maybe he talked to them about needing help. So his relatives came around. So his head and brought it into around here. Children used to play with it. And this is Edna talking. Wow, head must have been big. And he replied, head must be big. Even the shoulders and all of them knew about the head when they were born. These people, and Abakanaan, you know Kola, Kurali, and Edgar replied, yes, the jaw, right? and he in his eyes. She was also the one who used to slide with the hand. They used to use the head to slide when they brought it in. So the eyes moved and was blown away from where it used to be. Nasholuk never saw it. He never saw it, that one, the ten-legged polar bear's head. And Edna replied, I wonder what happened to him. And Avakali stayed. The eyes had moved away and it blew away. It was there somewhere where it used to be. And Edna said, they buried it? And Avakali replied, buried it in the land, maybe with sand or mud. Maybe somewhere it sank, somewhere over there. Touching. Yes. That's the end of the story. I would like to encourage one of you to, like I said earlier, to get a hold of one of these books and read to understand the in the depth. So, what do you think of the stone? I've always wondered, because I've heard it, I could understand India, and I've always heard about the story and that. And I wondered if it was written, because I always had heard it through the tape. And I am so glad that it's written. That's very crucial and essential that everything be written down. Because of maybe energy crisis, if there's an energy crisis, then you can't say that tape recorders or any machine, anybody can get a hold of a book and read it. So any questions on the story?
I missed the significance of the 10 legs of the polar bear.
10 legs
yeah.
Of the polar bear.
Mm-hmm. Why is it called the 10-legged polar bear?
It was a 10-legged.
But it had 10 legs.
It had 10 legs.
Okay.
And it has.
because they didn't say in the story why it had 10 legs or anything.
I was just discussing that with somebody, and I said, I bet it was supposed to have been two polar bears, but somewhere along the line, deformity inside the polar bear.
I think also, like, the story they were talking about, even things look impossible or big,
mm-hmm.
like he had lots of determination to do what he had to do.
Mm-hmm.
It also showed wisdom. Knowledge of his surroundings, thinking of safety.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole picture of the story brought up lots of different things. Fearlessness was another thing that came out through the story. And all of that kind of gives you a picture of the culture too, and maybe what they were trying to teach through the story. I don't know, but those are some of the things that came out.
Thank you very much. Precisely, but I think ever since they were small, the men hunted. So even my mother grew up hunting seal. She was always hunting. And they were taught, you know, how to hunt and to be careful of the eye movements and to took the nice thing to know all of this, especially the knowledge of where he needs to escape, where he needs to go just in case that polar bear. And sure enough, the polar bear came up and he knew where to go. And in the story. And it's a true story. It's not, because some stories are like not true stories. I know this is a true story because there are some people that I know. Kuralik was our relative, Jock, but he's our relative, and I know Nashon, if I'm correct, it might be the man from Waymar. So there are some names that I know, and I know this is a true story.
How long ago did this take place?
Pardon?
How long ago did this take place?
How long ago, considering like Guru was a little girl, it must have been around the early or the late 1800s. Yeah. Because Guru, my dad was born 1903. And Kuralu was a little bit older than him, so it must have been like in the late 1800s. Yeah, in the late 1800s. She was a little girl, and she used to write down, and just, and I know Kuralu. He's a relative of our family, and I'm dad. Was born 1903, so it's probably in the late 1800s. So I'll go ahead and turn it over to the moderator.
Hey, I told her a story about Ishmael's little people. Area, if she wanted me to share it today. Long ago, our ancestors used to have feasts with the Ishmaelites, their little people. And in our area, there's legends of Ishmaelites, three different types of Ishmaelites. The first one is called a Chinsiga. And then they stand about this tall, about that tall. And then there's the they stand about this tall from the floor. And there's also one other Ikshalup that's as tall as a human, and they like to steal our blackfish from the blackfish traps. But anyway, our ancestors used to have feasts with these little Chinsiga's, the smallest, most powerful form of Ikshalup. They used to live in this, they live in this one mound called close to Chulak. It's like like a little volcano mountain, but it's not a volcano mountain. Our ancestors used to go to this mountain and have peace with these Ishmaelites. The side of the mountain, the land would open up, and our ancestors used to go into this Ishmael, and the land would close, and they'd have a real big potlatch, a big feast, gift exchanging. Our ancestors used to bring a lot of birds and blackfish traps and all sorts of tools for the Ishmaelites, and the Ishmaelites in return gave our people gifts. Well, one year our people were invited to Indusa for a feast with the Ishmaelites, and they got all these gifts ready, and they brought everything over to that. They started their potlatch. When it came time to the gift exchanging, our people gave them nice furs and nice hunting tools and all kinds of stuff they could use. And then the Ishmaelites, they gave our ancestors dog food. And our ancestors, when they looked at this, they were wondering, why are you giving us dog food when we're giving you such nice gifts? We worked hard all year to prepare these, and you're giving us dog food in return? And our ancestors were so angry, and they left. And only one person took the gifts. He took all the gifts of the dog food. He brought it with him, put it in his breast basket. They all walked home, and our ancestors were asking him, why are you taking their dog food? That's real disgusting. You shouldn't have took it. And he just kept to himself. He walked home carrying the dog food. And as he got to his sod house, and he put his gifts inside the sod house. And when he woke up the next morning, all that dog food had turned into the finest fur, all kinds of fur and clothing, all ready for sewing already, and all kinds of really nice tools he could use. And he also became a really great hunter because he accepted something from the Israelites. And so ever since that time, when our ancestors got real mad at the Israelites, chose to hide themselves from us. They don't show themselves. But these days, they only show themselves to people who are pure or only who they think are worthy. And 4 years ago, I went to Mountain Village. That's where my wife is from. It's about 70 miles from Chivac. I went there by snow machine to pick up my oldest son. And it was in January, 30 degrees below zero, really cold, and I was driving home with snow machine, and my son was sitting in front of me. He was getting cold. I turned him face towards me and hide himself in the cold. I was driving the snow machine and he was sitting towards me. We got real close to that on our way to Chivac. And for some reason it got really foggy and I couldn't even see nothing. I just kept going the direction I thought was towards Chivac. My son told me as soon as it got really foggy and I couldn't see and I was driving, he looked underneath my arm, he looked under here, and on the side of our snow machine he could see, he said it was a daddy Yerushalayim, a black big, a mommy Yerushalayim, a black big, and two baby Yerushalayim. He said they were all holding hands and they were running right beside our snow machine. And he was watching them, he could see them running, see them holding hands, he said they were looking at him and laughing and running. Anyways, while they were running, as soon as it was foggy, he saw them. And I thought I was heading towards Chile. And then all of a sudden I came up again, I was going straight towards this hill, in this south hill where they live. And then I reached that hill and the fog lifted and I looked in front of me, I was at that in the south hill and I was like, holy cow. Because I was going towards Chile, and then I turned completely around and I was heading towards that hill. Chile was behind me. So when I reached that hill, I could see the top of it. I realized where I was, the fog cleared. And then I wondered, it really wasn't nothing to me. So I just turned around and I went to home, home to Chile. As soon as we got home, my son told my wife, Mom, I saw little people running beside us. He was only 8 years old, innocent little child. He described that he saw a daddy, mommy, and two kids holding hands. They were turning right beside us, no machine. So, and then a couple of summers ago, my parents went to fish camp, and they had just unloaded everything off their boat and brought everything up to the camp, and they had a dog. It ran across, jumped across this little slough, jumped across, went behind a little tundra mound, and that dog came trotting, and one of my brothers was looking at our dog, and that dog would walk, he'd be walking, and that dog would stop, turn around, and look behind him. Dog wagged his tail and started walking, and just finding his own feet. Then the dog stopped again, looked back. My brother was wondering, what dog is he looking at? So that dog kept walking, and our dog was walking, and then they saw that there's some alcohol that they walked right there. And then my brother got everyone's attention, all my brothers, my mom, dad. They went over right beside that place and they looked across and they could see that little Ishmael following the dog. It was wearing all black clothing, you know. And every time the dog would walk, the Ishmael would follow right behind him. The dog would stop in the back and the Ishmael would stop to take a look. And our dog was being real. And then the boat came around the corner. When my parents all looked at that boat and they looked back at Yerushalayim House, he was already gone. And the person came by and they told him they just saw the Yerushalayim House. That's the story I was willing to share.
Thank you.
Any questions?
What does that word mean?
Ixtlilxis, that means...
Does it just mean little people? I read some story about some little people that were, it was called wild babies. I know, I was cracking up, and I was wondering if that's what that meant, but it might be farther north or something. And the wild babies would cry and call people to them, and bad things could happen. So
oh, yeah.
You know that if you hear that wild baby, you're supposed to put your whistles over your ears, because otherwise they will call you and you'll get lost. So I was wondering if that was a wild baby.
Oh, that's a different story. It's from my area.
Oh, cool.
Can you share that story?
I don't know. No, I don't. He should.
The wild baby.
I don't know it all. I just know that.
Where did you hear that? And
I was reading in an anthropological book.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had gone up and got the story from a native person up there, and so I just remember thinking, oh, wild baby, that's so funny. And but then it's scary, like if you hear a wild baby, you have to put your mittens over your ears and protect yourself. So you should tell this person.
Thank you.
Do they, would they speak?
Yeah. They could speak the Persian language of their ancestors. They spoke with each other. They had peace together. They used to be friends with each other. And our elders told us they're going to hide themselves from us. But when there'll be a time when the land gets really thin, and we'll start seeing all our supernatural beings. There's a lot, not just there's us, but there's like a supernatural being of the sea, moon man. There's a supernatural being on land. It drags something. It's called a komunik. And there's all kinds of supernatural beings that our ancestors said we'll start seeing when the land becomes thin.
Can you explain what that means?
The land becomes thin. What they meant was, getting close to the end of our time. That's what they predicted. Our ancestors, just like our ancestors, predicted that someday there'll be no more electricity, there'll be no more planes flying, and we'll go back to living the way they did. And that's why she's really wanting to put everything on paper so that people can pass on their knowledge and traditions and way of life. And our ancestors predicted many things that would happen. A lot of them are happening, and it's getting really close to the time, the end time. So I never know when I would be, though. But that story of that little baby with it was actually this woman abandoned the baby. She had a baby, and she didn't want to take care of it. She lost her husband, and couldn't take any need for his child. And so what happened was this woman was real cruel, and she abandoned this baby and just left it out in the tundra. And from then people would hear a baby crying outside, and they'd go out of their sod house to go look for a baby, and that baby would attack them and kill them. Some people say that baby had a really huge mouth, that the mouth spread from one end of his hair all the way to the other end, and he would eat the next. And they said that in order to stop that baby from bothering you and your family, when you hear the baby crying, you get out of your sod house and you run around your sod house three times, and then the third time you go back in.
No.
Did you guys hear stories of, like listening to I guess the only thing I could figure it could be is when they talk about the very, you know, small, and up in our area, we have leader officers with our computer. Anyway, one of them also is like, I don't know if you hear of like a hearing stand or a hearing person, that's about helping the wilderness, and they, like our grantees tell us, put in here with you and we can't go to it, because there's something trying to draw us away from the group or, you know, that kind of thing. But, I was just kind of wondering if you guys heard stories like that, like hearing that. My mom said they actually caught one when she was young. And anyway, this one that is being lived in the wilderness, but it was a human. And they stole fish, they developed friends and stuff like that. And they sleep at night and they lived in caves. And there's been people that have found the caves, certain things. Anyway, she said that they caught one long ago. This would be different if it would be a wild thing. So, yeah, we hear some stories and stuff like that.
Where is that? Where is she that can describe that?
And another thing, you were talking about seasons, like how you said, well, the old people just say that from the land of sin, it's going to the times and stuff like that. You hear that too. And my mom said her grandma told her safety over and over. It's going to come. Even though things are really smooth right now, there'll come a time when you do go back to living like the old ways. And so people are telling you to store stuff for when that really comes. And anyway, I was kind of, when she told us all this, it kind of made me think of even like the Bible talks about the incoming times and how you can, you will know when they're getting close by the signs and the signs of seeing more spiritual stuff. That age is upon us, because there's a lot of different things, more than normal. So, anyway, that's just something that I maybe think about.
Do you have any stories from your area?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have lots of stories about different beasts and like animals. We've got up in Scotland, there's the tale of the Loch Ness Monster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, its description changes in every story because, you know, so many people say that they've seen it, and there's lots of people who've tried to photograph it, and it's always like really long, like a massive serpent that lives in the loch up in Scotland, and lots of people go up there to try and find it. And that's I think that thing, it's a story that's been around for like a few hundred years. So, down in Cornwall, there's it's down in the south, but a little bit that sticks out at the end.
South of it.
Southwest, down
the south.
England? Yeah, the beast of Bodmin Moor. And that's supposed to be just a massive cat that kind of like stalks around the moors. And you know, when you go hiking, you have to like make sure that you think it attracts the the beast of Bodmin Moor. And in Ireland, there's stories of like little people, leprechauns, like there's other tales and fairy tales about lots of small people other than leprechauns. I mean, and the leprechauns are an Irish tale, but there's stories of little people in England and Scotland as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is interesting. So, and
what have you heard?
Have I heard about
little people?
I haven't spoken to anyone who's seen any, but. There's lots of tales that are told as children, but not as, it's not like we're told stories that have been passed down through our family by people who've seen them. It's more of like fairy tales that we're told.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if they're true or not, but yeah. Lots of different myths and legends from, like, well, yeah, going back through history. And also our history, like, just of all the kings and queens, and there's loads of myths and legends which go along with that, like King Arthur, you know, and the Knights of the Round Table, because that was kind of all passed on orally as well, for, I think, a lot of the time. And no one really knows a lot what actually really happens in a lot of the stories. Yeah, there's loads of stories.
So with the UCF cultural group, do you have those people's stories to the
little people's stories? Mm-hmm. There was a story about that I heard secondhand, that they used to even play with the children. We call it Imina. And this reminded me of a story that an elder told about. It reminded me of a person that was out somewhere. Usually people who are hermits, or they might have called them, what did they call those people with a beard? I don't know. This family was living, they had a house, and they knew there was somebody out there because they would be losing some food and some things. And so the man started putting out whatever maybe that person would eat, a little plate of something, and sure enough, it would be gone. That food would be gone. So there's a, in my time, they say not to be alarmed by anything like that, but to, like, treat them with respect. Even when my mom was alive, we would hear of ghosts, you know, of other beings coming to you. And same thing, just respect them. Don't be unkind to them, you know, with treating. So that's how we were told not to be disrespectful or to hurt them in the spirit world. So that's how we have been taught. And just referring back to what you said about being fear and innocent, I believe. It reminds me of angels, because some people get scared, like they call them ghosts or whatever. When I think about it, I don't personally see them, but in me, when I'm sewing, I would be meditating and praying. It feels like my mom nodded and wisdom would come to me, or I could sense somebody else's soul, and I knew exactly who that person was. It's just like that. I remember traveling in California, and my friend, she was a reverend in Seattle, Reverend Willa Roper had just recently passed away, and I had a chance to be in California. And I started walking to the studio where I was working on this documentary, and at last. And I could sense her. I could hear her. It's amazing, things that happened to me. And this is the first time I allowed somebody to tell me about this story. It's a true story. It happened to me. I could hear her. I could recognize her voice. And no one go this way. And so there have been some angels that I've heard. And so talking about stories, it's from generation to generation. It's handed down. And there's a well-known storyteller by the name of Pete Chivalet, who is so intelligent. He tells stories. And also Floyd Abakanaya and Justus McKinney, who's still alive. And I would highly recommend whoever is seeing the videotape that if you have elders in your respective villages or cities or wherever, to take them and also to transcribe them. For there's a will, there's a way. If you cannot understand the language, find somebody who can and transcribe. You know, I really highly recommend, and that's my goal being here. It's divinely designed, and I think it's time that we start putting everything in writing, and even if it's like in our language, I can do it for. You can do it. You can learn. You can learn the language. So that's my passion. My passion is to give you that. How do you call it? The ability, or you can do it. The gumption, the desire to, the desire to. Do something to preserve the story, because at this time we're talking about stories. And we have tons and tons of cassette and tons of videotapes at home in the North Slope. And there's a book Dewey got. That one is excellent. It's all written in English. And also I have those two books that give you. I'm interested in seeing them. So get familiar with this area at the university. It's a very rich place to get books, this kind of book. And even nowadays, there's the internet where you can get information.
So. Since we're on UCAP stories, what I would like to do is go around and ask if people have any questions in relation to how UCAP stories are told or something, or that kind of thing. So, John has something that he.
I was wondering, firstly, when did they start getting written down, like, as in book form?
In book form? I have with me in the apartment is a first written form of UCAP language. When my grandfather learned, he was one of the first immigrants, I think, to go to school. He was 12 years old. After his parents died, the older brother decided, there's a school. There's a school opening in Barrow, so you need to go there and learn. Because they were all in the back. Nobody taught in the back. So when he came back and learned the English language, they started writing. And there's some, the Presbyterian Church had a form of the way that a church should be run, and they wrote it down in English. And this language, Mother Aiken was involved, my sister, and there's this Ingrac History and Language Commission back in the 19, when the North Slope Borough was formed in 1972, thank God, they started videotaping the elders, started videotaping and cassette tape. And so during the time after 1972, Dorothy Edwardson, Leona Simmons, Okako, and Molly Peterson, Edna McLean, these proficient music teachers, Martha Stackhouse, all these people, they started translating from Ingrac to English. That's where the Ingracs were fortunate that we had these transcribers, you know, from Ingrac to English. So it happened at the time when our local borough government was established in 1970 by the late Eben Hoffman Sr. And that's where we had started taping and videotaping and cassette-taping. So I can't tell you the exact year or the date, but that's when we started putting everything in writing. And like I said, Pee-wee Scott and the books I have, you're more than welcome to look through them. And there's a vast amount of information from the North Slope Borough. I have the internet, how you can get in there. So you can get it from me if you want.
I was wondering, are all the stories that are written oral tradition, or are they stories, like, are your stories written or from the elders, or is it all oral history?
A long time ago, the stories were handed down from, like, maybe grandfather to father, from father to son. For me, my story was always told by my mother, and it stuck into my head, into my heart, into my soul, and I could remember it. And that's how, from generation to generation, before tape recordings, before videotapes, before cassette tapes, before, you know, all that, just imagine they were like given to them, you know, and then they themselves remember it, memorize it, it was always told to them, and then they turn around and give it to their son, their grandson, whoever was available. Before machinery came,
it was from one person to another person.
I was just wondering if there's any stories that the Lutherans or elders would tell you to sort of teach you not to go off too far from the house, but the stories that scare you.
Exactly. I remember growing up and our parents would say, you better keep your hood on, otherwise the northern light's gonna come down and chop your head off and play ball with you. And, duh. So we kept our hood on all the time. And when I think about it right now, that was to prevent us from having earaches. There's a lot of wind, and I think, that's why. So we won't catch cold, and it's just like, oh my God, we see the northern lights, and they're going to cut our heads off and play ball with it. We're going to keep our hoods on. Yes.
I guess mostly I was wondering, I've heard that Inupiaq can be spoken, or kind of dialect can be heard all the way circumpolar around the world. And I guess I'm wondering if you know if their stories are kind of shared. You know, are the stories similar from other Inupiaq cultures around the world? I don't know if you would know that, but that's, you know.
Canada, Akhlaabik, and Burak, we can understand each other.
Yeah.
And going down to Kotzebue, Point Hope, around that area, we can understand each other. And one time I had a chance to go to, I can't even remember the name of that place, they're called Sukhya. Sukhya, Eskimo, Inupiaq. And I went to their school and I was so amazed that they had the same Inupiaq alphabet.
Sukhya.
Somewhere down there.
Oh, anyway. They're closely related to the Sukhya.
Yeah. And the Inupiaq language, not all of it. Yeah, really careful. We sometimes, almost understand each other.
But I guess she was asking if the stories are similar.
Yeah.
Like within the North Pole region, like you have lots of different Inuit people. And you shared, like when I went to Far East Russia, the what they call Siberian Inuits, shared some of the same stories that my people.
Personally,
is that similar with the
youths
and the
farmer? Personally, I do not know of any similarities of stories. I haven't had that experience of, you know, listening to stories from
Canada.
I haven't had that.
No,
but
I just think it's fascinating, and I just wondered if maybe you had heard that other stories were similar.
But listening to the little people, wow, they didn't know it. England has a little tongue and a Swedish little people. They're trying to tell us something. What I remember from the last song that Claiborne took up really was such a powerful, beautiful, modern dance that to me. And it's not story is like the last motion he made was like children was like praying, you know. And so the dances that have been composed are very spiritual. It's just like you could just feel the spirit. Mm-hmm. And the stories, I'm pretty sure I know for a fact that, you know, when I hear those Eskimo songs, I think, wow, they do tell the story. So, and they're like, you could tell, because my mom has an Eskimo song and my father, Maya calls that, motion dance that we could dance. So there are stories in the Eskimo dance.
I was wondering, Inupiaq also has a sort of like, you call it Armageddon sort of story, about like, you, I guess, return to zero and like the lost electricity and everything, all of that. This question actually kind of goes out to everybody else. Is there any idea as to the time frame? No, I'm actually interested because I've heard a lot of stories like about the Mayan calendar, which ends in 6 years, and about like the approaching pandemic that we're supposed to have, and
it never happened.
To happen soon.
1K2 never happened.
Massive depression, worldwide depression that's supposed to happen. And I'm wondering because I think it's interesting that all these societies and religions and even science is saying like everything is coming to a head. Everything's coming to some kind of
the elders, especially my parents, my mom, said, "Don't panic." And they said, "Don't believe everything that you hear." And remember the 1K2 people were really getting ready for that day, and it never happened.
I just think it's interesting because there's a whole bunch of different like cultures, societies, from vastly different perspectives and from great distances apart, they're all saying the same thing.
There have been dreams. I just remembered my dream. And my aunt had that dream. My sister had that dream. I had that dream. So it's about the big flood that's coming. And I had a dream of...